Hey everyone, welcome to the All Things XR podcast. I'm Mojtaba. In today's episode, we have Nicholas West, co-founder and CEO of Riron. Hi, Nicholas.
Hey, great to meet you.
Thanks very much. So, Nicholas, can you tell us more about Riron and what is Riron and who's its audience?
Sure. So, maybe just to start on a high level. So, one way of seeing Riron is it's a SDK for logging and visualizing or creating visualizations of multimodal data that changes over time. And it's used by engineers and researchers in fields like robotics, spatial computing, computer vision, so a whole host of different applications, but pretty heavily in those areas.
Awesome. So Nicholas, can you tell us more about yourself and your background and how did you get the idea of Riron and what's the founding story behind Riron?
Sure, happy to. So, yeah, my background is a computer vision and machine learning engineer. So prior just to starting Riron, I've been building products based on that kind of technology for quite almost 10 years. And I guess I actually met my two other co-founders at a Swedish startup called Volumental that does 3D scanning of feet to recommend shoes like in physical retail. And basically what happened there is that we were a team of computer vision developers and sort of working on that 3D scanning and kind of recommendation and measurement algorithms. And EML, our now CTO, kind of joined that team and just came in. He came in from the gaming industry and just started building. So he didn't have a computer vision background, so he approached everything just doing what he did best. So really just writing like really powerful visualization environments. So that he could just see what's going on and maybe solve it with simple algorithms. And sort of that change combined with, or that sort of approach combined with our maybe more academic approach that we had before just was really impactful for that team. So that product that we built was like multiple years ahead of any real sort of competitor and really kind of took that space. Wasn't still growing quite well, I think, that company, but not an enormous market, but did really well. And kind of one of my learnings from that period was like how powerful and important the tools that we built were, and like tools for visualizing and understanding kind of how your product is behaving, what your algorithms are doing. So it kind of started out of us building those some just debugging tools for the team. I'm working on some 3D algorithm or something like that, or some machine learning algorithm. And I just want to be able to see the output, kind of all the steps in between and so on. And I want to make that super, super easy. So I do it all the time. And that was really powerful for us, for our team. And then it kind of started spreading through the organization. So became the team that our data labors used, became the team that the operations team, the tool that operations team used to kind of understand what was going on in the like actual out in stores and kind of debugging real-world applications. We ended up using those visualizations in sales and kind of just product with communication between the engineers and product managers. So just really, really useful. So I left there after a couple of years, and kind of since then I've worked on a lot of mobile computer vision and mobile AR in different ways, and just found myself kind of being, caught by the bug of kind of visualization-driven development. That's just like the way that you'd write tests in normal software. Like you write the test first and then you kind of implement towards it. You'd said, because these things are really hard to test oftentimes, you write a small visualization and kind of code against that instead. And that just really driving how you do everything. So I've been bitten by that bug and found myself just rebuilding these tools over and over again. So that I guess is sort of the background. Prior to this, I started another company. It was called Graphics. So it's basically can get into that more if you want, but it was a mobile AR tool for kind of doing remote collaboration. And we kind of hit the wall, after I guess a while of a product development, we realized that if this is going to work, kind of the algorithms and kind of the performance of that whole system just needed to be at a different level, which translates to the kind of the tooling needs to be at a completely different level. And we kind of would have had to raise a bunch of money, which we weren't really ready to do. So that in a way that kind of killed that company. So that was really the trigger point for me to kind of get back to this old obsession I've had around this kind of visualization and data tooling. And so that's what basically got me to start talking again with Emil, who built those original tools. And I was one of probably the best developer I'd ever worked with myself. And then Moritz, who had been the CEO of Rerun for us, of Volumental for a bunch of years, and I love working with as well. So we all got together, and kind of that was the impetus for starting Rerun.
Awesome. So Nicholas, can you tell us more about the product and actually the audience and the experience and the pain it is trying to solve for its users and audience?
Sure. So you took like the technical side. I guess I can start from there. So just a little more concretely, I guess, what it is. So the way the way developers, so it's first of all, it's the main, the users are developers and researchers. So it's a SDK. So that means they import Rerun in their software and basically log data the same way you would log maybe just a text line. If you're in JavaScript, you do console log and just see the text kind of popping out, or printf or something like that. But instead of just logging text, you can log tensors and kind of motion, 3D transforms, point clouds, meshes, images, kind of really just any kind of data. And together with, so you can log all that data, but you can also build up sort of a structure and sort of semantic model of what that is. So you can, as you log, you give a little bit of a path and which builds up some structure and kind of basically tell the logger like, hey, this is a 3D point cloud or something like that. So you're kind of modeling the data as you log it. And then when you log the data, it streams out to our viewer that you connect to. And so we handle kind of all the serialization and all those sort of transport and all those sort of hard technical pieces, and just automatically generate like this really hopefully good looking and like high performance visualization. So unless you just see first maybe the output of your methods, but also just all the steps that go into them, and just see as that's happening over time. And then you can sort of scroll back and forth in time so that you can really just understand not just like what happened, but kind of why and what were all the steps that made that happen. So that's the base way that people use it.
Great. I myself have actually faced the pain earlier in my career, where we were working on, for example, AR apps with Vuforia SDK and such. Yeah. Early SDKs, there were actually no way to debug your app. You had to rebuild it, rerun it. And the AR applications are actually really hard to debug. You have to just put them in the environment to see how they are reacting to your scenario. And such tools will be actually very beneficial for researchers, developers, and etc. So, Nicholas, what do you think about the current trend of AI and especially the new trend, which are multimodal models?
Well, I think I'm as excited about the kind of recent progress as anyone. I guess the thing that excites me the most with my experience of building a lot of products for the physical world and or sort of related things like that, where there's often not a lot of large training sets that you can use directly, and it's costly to generate data and so on, it's really this trend that we can train really huge models like on text and of course on all other kinds of data now with multimodal, and then reuse those general models and kind of make them really useful in application areas where we actually don't have that much data. So I think that is probably the trend that makes me the most excited. So we've seen some recent papers, I think something came out, Meta released something this week. We're kind of using like a multimodal visual language model to help a robot sort of handle the general tasks and sort of general situation awareness and so on, to then call out the particular movement trajectories and so on for modules that you've implemented in other ways, but sort of solving that generality piece of in a lot of other scenarios. So that I find that really exciting. I think that will open up for a huge amount of like really, really useful sort of real world applications. So yeah, I find that I'm super excited about that.
So, actually, Nicholas, when was the founding date of Redrun?
Yeah, I think officially with February. Let's see, what year is it now? It's 2 years ago in February, so February 2nd or 1st, something like that, 2022. So that's when we at least signed all the papers.
So you actually had a very good timing, you know?
Yes, yeah, I think that was part of it. I think us having similar experiences to you, just feeling this pain, the lack of tooling, and how hard it is to debug these kinds of applications well, and how hard it is to build really good tools. We felt this pain for a long time, and the thing that really pushed us over the edge was thinking that yeah, actually now a lot of the other pieces are like getting solved or are solved about. Yeah, so it's now like we're getting like to really good performance on the models. The practicality of just deploying them in embedded settings is actually pretty easy to do now, and there's sort of all those other foundational pieces, but just weren't seeing anything happening on this, I guess you could call it observability tooling for the space. And I guess we did a bunch of market research to kind of understand that, yeah, it feels like it's actually the right time to address this as a company rather than, yeah, building it again for ourselves.
Great, of course. So, Nicholas, can we dive a little bit more on the technical side of your product? What
Sure.
makes Rerun special, and what unique Rerun edges can help its users get ahead in developing for the future of AI? And actually, you've developed Rerun in Rust, yeah?
Yeah.
And what made you choose
To make that
Rust?
choice? Yeah, okay. So I mean, that goes to one of the, or maybe two of the main selling points or starting selling points, is really like performance and speed, and cross sort of working everywhere. So one thing is we just see that these kinds of application, particularly talking multimodal, and often if we're talking real world, there's often motion involved and things like that. Just the data comes in fast and there's a lot of it. So just being able to explore it and understand it with really high performance is just crucial. And the second part is the sort of the value of unifying as a team, unifying your visualization stacks. Being able to use the same kind of visualizations kind of in your like scrappy early prototyping, like maybe in a Jupyter notebook, as you're using to, as in your observability platform, you're using to kind of maybe debug your running robot or headset or something like that, and just having a uniformity and making it work like in incredibly high performance settings, native but also on the web. So those two things were, I guess, very driving for us to choose Rust. Right? And it's a pretty extreme choice that we did. Rust also means we've been, I mean, we've written our own basically graphics engine, and kind of just seriously really written everything from scratch. And our CTO is also the creator of eGUI, which is one of the most popular Rust GUI frameworks, and we do a lot of work directly on eGUI to create Rerun. So it's an extreme choice, and we're but really taking ownership of like completely end to end that whole tech stack to kind of deliver that. Yeah, both the ability to have a unified tech stack and like super high performance, basically.
Awesome, great. So one of the things that took my attention of Rerun is its open source model. So
Yeah.
can you tell us more about that, and also on the technical side, and also on the business model side?
Sure. So yeah, Rerun is the kind of Rerun SDK and Visualizer is completely open source. So it's, yeah, not as in open source and free, right? It's dual license, like a lot of Rust projects under MIT and Apache 2. So that means you can just completely do whatever you want with it as a user. And well, technically, that makes a lot of things easier for users, right? There's no risk. If you don't agree with our direction, you can just fork, and you don't have to be afraid that we'll lock you in. So that was something that we found very early, that this kind of infrastructure is so core to your development process and so on, that it really is an important consideration for anybody when they're choosing their tools, like basically lock in and so on. So that was really important from that side. So basically, that's great, right? We're just giving you that for free, which is a great free is an awesome value proposition. But as a business, right, that of course that doesn't work on its own. So everything that we built so far is, as I said, yeah, completely free and open source. And that is this SDK and the visualizer, and that's really focused on primarily at the single developer kind of working locally. And you can run, when I say locally, I mean that in a very like fuzzy manner, but I'm thinking maybe your laptop and a robot or a headset or basically what's you and that thing. And we have lots of teams using it in a team setting, but we don't provide there are a lot of affordances that you want as a team and running things in production that just are not there yet. And so that is where our commercial offering that is kind of in the works, that what that will target. So targeting teams, basically that, I guess what we're thinking about it as is kind of a new class of observability. So calling it multimodal observability, basically. And so that centralized platform where you can gain understanding into what your software is doing, like from R&D out to production, and as you're kind of collaborating around any problems or kind of progress that you're making, that'll be where you kind of look at your data and also extract data sets and that kind of thing from your actual product use.
Awesome. So Nicholas, to make our listeners get a better sense of what Rerun do, can you tell us at what stage, at what part of the researcher or developer journey Rerun comes into the play, and can you give us an example?
Sure. Okay. So I think, I mean, in one way, it's a broad question, but like our vision is to just be the to be used from Rerun should be your second or third import when you start on a new project at all. So you can start using Rerun basically as soon as you have some data to look at or a method that does something. So just from that very first early prototyping stage, when you just want to verify that you understood even what's going on, and maybe you're say that you might open up a notebook and you have a small test data set, or maybe you're streaming some data live from a device that you're building, and basically just from the point where you want to just okay, let me look at that data, then you can start logging it to Rerun and kind of visualize it live. So that very like very first, and then maybe the second thing you might do is pull home a couple pre-trained neural nets. And then run those, and you'll just want to visualize the output. It's like that—they're really the first things you're just playing around with. So that is kind of where it really starts. A lot of our users now, I mean, the bulk of usage really is teams that have come further than that. So they have built a product; it's probably in R&D or already in production, and the R&D team is kind of have built some used Rerun to build all their internal visualization tools, and they're using that for basically as their main debugger, their main kind of observability into their product during development. In the future, we think it'll be also the kind of core thing that you use when you're in production and kind of understanding your live production product. But that's not something that's really ready for yet.
Awesome. So Nicholas, as we all know, Apple introduced its first try at spatial computing space with Apple Vision Pro, and there are lots of opportunities and use cases for AR and VR and actually multimodal AI models. And the combination of AR and VR and AI, there are lots of use cases and opportunities. What do you think about this space? I myself, as someone who has been in the AR field for the past 12, 15 years, have always waited for Apple to actually come into the play seriously, and this year it happened. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I'm super excited that they're finally coming here to the space. So for one, I think them just joining and managing to generate the interest and excitement that they are generating is just incredible for the whole spatial computing space, I think. So that's one. I'm really excited about that. I like you, I've been waiting for it for a long time. So that I'm very excited about. I think on your question about AI and kind of multimodal AI and how that plays together, I think that that's really the other piece. And that basically once you, I mean, there's a lot of things to solve when it comes to spatial computing headsets and so on in terms of just resolution and kind of just latency and so on of this, the base tracking and all that. But once you have that in place, the really difficult thing actually becomes the understanding of the world. At least as soon as you move out of a VR, it's actually really hard to build applications that are dynamically dependent on kind of the world around you. So one, you just need a base understanding of that world, just the 3D shape and so on, but yeah, understanding the world and then also building agents that behave in a useful, natural way on top of that, like very dynamic, hard to model upfront way. I think that just requires AI basically to do well, at least to do well easily enough that there are going to be a lot of products. So I think from that perspective, AI really opens up yeah, a huge amount of awesome products that I think are on the way. Yeah.
Great, great. So as we talked about AR and VR, AI landscape is actually pretty interesting. What do you think about the companies working in AI? What do who's you think got the best chance in the coming years? Apple, Google, Microsoft, or even small companies like Mistral?
I think personally, I'm not, you know, the best. I'm not the expert on kind of predicting that. If I was really good at predicting that, I'd probably just, you know, become a public market investor and make my living that way. But I'm really excited that they're all competing. I think that's my basic answer. If I listen to the kind of the top scientists on each of these, I'm I guess a team Jan LeCun kind of guy. So maybe that pushes me towards Meta slightly, but other than that, I'm mainly excited that they're all competing and that's it's still quite an open game. I think it'd be great for the whole space.
Have you tried recent multimodal models and do you have any experience with them and what do you think? What's your analysis?
So as CEO, kind of, I don't get as much time building actual products anymore as I used to, so it is more me just toying around. But yeah, I played around with them, and I mean, it's incredibly impressive what they can do. I still think that in a lot of ways, there's in terms of a lot of applications really need a level of robustness and kind of predictability and control that are not quite there yet in a lot of cases, and it still takes a lot of product work to make things work reliably for a real world product. So it doesn't, it's not that kind of just drop in and you have your product for a lot of cases, but yeah, incredibly impressive what's the progress and kind of what's possible now.
Totally agree. So the other field that I'm really excited about, Nicholas, is robotics. I've said before in the tweet that robotics is in Siri phase, and we haven't reached
Yeah.
the ChatGPT moments of robotics yet. There are lots of opportunities, and I think one of the best areas of multimodal models that can play their part is robotics. How does Riran help developers and researchers in the robotics field?
Yeah, so I mean, first of all, a lot of our actually like heaviest usage is actually come from both drones and kind of humanoid robotics companies. So, and for them, it really is that story about unifying your visualization stack and just that performance. They just have motion involved. When motion gets involved, you just need really high speed, and when perception is involved, you need like to handle a lot of sort of multimodal data. So I think that is a key set of users for us already. And to sort of step back a little bit, the actual our one of the main theses behind Rerun is kind of our belief that a lot more of the world's software will start looking a lot more like robotics. Basically because of AI. So there's a lot that sort of a more general audience can learn from how roboticists have built software over, you know, the last decades and kind of the tooling that they built and so on. And so we lean heavily into that tradition. Yeah, for instance, we have one of the early Willow Garage sort of developers on our team who was part of building the original like robotic operating system back in the day. Yeah, so we care a lot about robotics, both for robotics' sake, right? But also for other software. I think the second part is really that, as you're seeing that, like AI is kind of having a huge impact in robotics, but that also changes kind of the needs for tooling. So I mentioned that the idea of unifying your visualization stack and basically that becomes a particular important point for that. So the AI developers and AI researchers, they're used to a completely different tech stack that is maybe a little bit lower friction, easier to iterate, just a different sort of set of constraints than maybe your robotics engineers. And so I think we also believe that the robotics will be revolutionized by AI, which means a new set of developers has actually been and researchers are coming into robotics. So for them, you really need a new. They like other tools. They work in Python. They don't do all the. They don't train models inside ROS, right? So you need this unified layer of like getting the same kind of view and understanding, like when you're training as when you're kind of deploying on a robot. And having that is a huge value proposition for the robotics community, particularly those that are employing AI heavily.
So, as you said, with the progresses in robotics and also the recent news about Apple Vision Pro and the excitement around spatial computing, what overlap do you see between robotics and spatial computing that makes you excited about the fields?
Well, I think there are overlaps in applications. I'm sure there'll be a lot of applications of maybe interacting with robots using AR and VR and things like that. But from our perspective as a kind of a horizontal tool maker, there's a lot of ways of looking at least the spatial computing kind of platforms like headsets and input devices as basically like a robot on your face, right? And where a robot is needing to understand the world and how itself is moving. To be able to move around or take action in it physically, a spatial sort of headset is it doesn't have any robotics arms, but it's the actions that it can take is what pixels to show you. So it's kind of acting through you, right? So I think that is basically saying that they share a huge amount of the same technical problems or constraints. So they need very similar solutions. I think that in practice, they come from very different traditions, so the tooling that are used in both these fields are pretty different. But yeah, I think there's a lot of overlap, particularly technically.
Awesome. So, as a CEO, Nicholas, one of the things that happens a lot and makes me worried about new ideas and etc. In AI startups today are the disruptions that happen in this space. How do you see run in this regards? Are there any dangers or worries that a big company might rivals reruns tools, and what is your advice for fellow entrepreneurs to avoid the danger of being disrupted?
Yeah, I think when it comes to us in particular, well, we I think for starters wouldn't have started Rerun if some bigger company already had solved this. I think we really came into it because we wanted to solve this for the world, because this lack of tooling was sort of holding everybody back. And yeah, had someone else solved this already, we would have been building a new probably AR company or something right now. And I think what we learned since then really is like all the reasons why the big companies have not solved this well yet. Just there are huge, big company organizational issues, but also just the incentive structures to take the years that are required to really build this right from the ground up is just not there in a company like that. It could happen, of course, but in general, I don't know of any other companies at all that are kind of taking the approach we're doing. Building it so thoroughly from the ground up and just generally approaching things the way we are. So for us, in particular for our stage, the only real risk that I'm thinking about like is that the right approach and are we executing fast enough on it? Everything else to me is sort of very, very secondary. So I don't really think about disruption from a big player or really anyone else for us. So that's how I see it for us. And I think in terms of me, I don't know that I'm in a position to give great advice on that for other entrepreneurs. It's very personal particular to what you're doing, I think. And but in our case, I'm not worried about it.
Great. So, Nicholas, what do you think will be the role of multimodal models in reaching AGI? And will get there first, you think, some random guy in a garage or big companies like OpenAI and Google?
Well, I mean, I do think that the way things are looking right now is that scale matters a huge amount.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of like making really fast progress on those big models, it seems unlikely that someone in the garage will amass the amount of capital or I guess GPUs and energy needed to do that. I'm team guy in the garage, right? But I think in this instance, it seems unlikely. I think maybe I'm not so sure about the term AGI. I don't know what it is really personally. I don't know that we have any examples out there in the world of AGI. I don't know that humans are that general in our intelligence, and we're certainly more flexible by a very large margin than the models that have been trained that we've seen so far. But the humans are also very specialized. So I think it's I'm not sure what that is even. So I tend to actually not think so much about AGI rather than like much more powerful capabilities that are intelligent.
Great. So Nicholas, what are the some upcoming trends or developments in computer vision that you're excited about?
Yeah, I mean everything really, to be honest, but I'm very excited about both the big models and kind of this multimodal trend that we've been seeing that I do think that is able to lend that big data set robustness to areas with smaller data sets, as well as all the progress we have on just making networks really, really fast and work on embedded devices. But in general, I think something really fun about Rerun is we get to talk to a lot of companies that build like really, really cool things. I mean, there's obviously the flashy things like the big spatial computing headsets and drones and humanoids, but they're also just small teams building products for blind people or helping to improve agriculture or just making some sports more fun or so on. So or improving industrial manufacturing or so on. So the thing that's more broadly makes me really excited is just how many fields, like how many parts of our economy and lives are people are really pushing and building new things, be like on the back of like all this progress in multimodal. That's what makes me super excited.
Yeah, me too. So Nicholas has our last question. What is the vision of Rerun for the future and what are your next plans?
Yeah, I think our vision is basically to enable this new class of software that I think it's been around for a while, but really becoming big now, which is about processing multimodal data, usually over time. To just enabling the people building those products to understand what they're building and how it's performing from R&D to production. And I'm just really, our vision is basically to make more of the sort of real world tangible progress happen a lot faster in these fields. And so that's really what we're aiming at. Practically for us, that it's, I mean, building out a lot more features, of course, and on the open source side, really extending the ability for users to just build more and more different kind of applications around their visualizations. But on the kind of bigger picture, just building out that, I think a new category of software that we're calling a multimodal observability. Basically that platform to help, centralized platform to help these teams understand and kind of collaborate around their data.
Great. Thanks very much, Nicholas, for joining the All Things Excel podcast. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. It was fantastic. Very much.